This is our circuit board, which called for a terminal. So I used my computer, which is only a 128K, but that should be enough to find out what it does, if it does anything at all, which it probably doesn't. So, got it?
Makes sense to me.
Good. There's no sense in waiting. Are you ready?
Sure, I guess.
It'll probably just burn out or something.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory, presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of our Prismatic Film Cast. We got a great film for you this week. If you would like to contribute any ideas to the show, recommend a movie, feel free to drop us a line, feedback@prismatictsunami.com, or drop by our Discord server, and do it there. Going ahead and letting you know who I got with me today. He too was once played by Robert Picardo. It's Richard.
Hey, I dreamed about this.
We all did. She too disappoints audiences by playing a wacky pop culture lover in the third act. It's Vanessa.
Oh Lord, that's terrifying.
He often responds to demands for the secrets of the universe with a little Richard ditty. That's Jason. Thank you. And finally, why does my spaceship smell like beer? It's the kid.
I don't understand the cat.
Dude. I didn't either.
We're gonna talk about explorers. This was a 1985. I guess it's a cult movie at this point, maybe ish.
Ish, yeah.
It was a charming adventure. It came out in July. It was a summer movie. Zoomed right to number 6 at the box office. It made $3.6 million its opening weekend. Rated PG, runtime of 1 hour and 49 minutes. And I looked at the box office for this weekend because I remember loving this movie as a kid. By the way, that I just said is going to play a lot into what we're going to talk about today, because this is a nostalgia-fed selection. No doubt about it.
This was one I recommended for the show when we first started.
Oh, and it was a good recommendation. It was a really great selection for the show. We'll find out whether or not it was a really great movie for us to watch, but I think it was a good choice for the show regardless. It was released the same week as it was beat out by Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Was number 2 at the box office that weekend, came out that same weekend. The number 1 spot at the box office was the second week of Back to the Future. That's what this was up against. There was no way this movie was going to do well at that point. And I remember picking up some more trivia about that. I don't know if I actually noted it down, but it was also the same weekend as Live Aid. This was 85. I was 10 years old. I mean, some of you were younger.
Some of us didn't exist.
The only person in the room that might actually remember Live Aid as anything that was a thing.
Right.
Live Aid was huge.
I remember it was featured recently in the Freddie Mercury thing.
I was not alive. I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Cocoon was still in the box office. It held number 3. Rambo was still in the box office. It's 8th week in the box office, and it still beat Explorers.
I've seen all of those movies.
Did you see in the theater? Do you know?
None.
Yeah. Well, you're not really a theater lover anyway, but
we rented a lot of VHSs.
We did too.
I think that was back at the time where I was still also renting the VHS players.
One of the reasons I am such a movie fan is because we were a cable family. Vanessa knows what that's like. She's been through this recently in life. My dad was in cable television, which meant that in the 80s, we had everything that you could get on cable for free as a part of his benefits package for working there, right?
Every channel is fun.
So nowadays, that is a slew of networks. Back then, it meant that you weren't stuck with the 3 that you could get on antenna, plus, if you still had UHF, maybe you had some other options, but depending where you lived. But that was a very different time, and that meant for us movie channels. You know, so I grew up with HBO and Showtime and Cinemax and
we had a lot of that
stuff like
going on.
And just absorbed movies. That's what I loved. That's what happened. So we didn't go to the theater a lot. We did some when I was a kid because my mom loved going to the movies. My dad didn't. You couldn't smoke. I mean, he'd have to go like 2 hours without a cigarette. Killed him. So it wasn't really a thing he did a lot. Plus, because he was in cable television, they considered the theater kind of a competition.
Right.
It was competition for your movie watching dollars, I guess, right there.
Fair. So
there you go. Stay home and watch HBO, damn it. but explores. A boy obsessed with 50s sci-fi movies about aliens has a recurring dream about a blueprint of some kind which he draws for his inventor friend. With the help of a third kid, they follow it and build themselves a spaceship. Now what?
That's pretty accurate.
That's literally what it said.
That's insanely accurate.
The best part is,
were
I got...
we watching the same movie?
Oh, no, dude. We got like 50 minutes, 55 minutes into this movie, and I'm sitting here going, you know, I didn't realize nothing's happened yet. It's like, this is weird. We're halfway through the film.
Well, it's so crazy because it hit a point, and I'm like, there can't be much left. And I looked at the time and stamp, and I'm like, it's only been an hour?
And the big thing I remember from this movie from being a kid was the bit with the aliens, right? I mean, that's the
big part. I didn't remember that at all until we got there.
That's like the last, 10 minutes of the movie, pretty much.
It's crazy.
Closer to 30.
It's more than that, but it doesn't feel that way.
I'll go 20, split the difference. I don't think it was more than 20 minutes of the movie.
See, in this movie, like, I've never seen this one before, but it had strong vibes of, like, Flight of the Navigator, which I saw a ton of times when I was a kid.
Was my choice over this one, but...
And Flight of the Navigator, interestingly, I think it had about the same level of kind of levity to it, but it had it took the subject more seriously in a way.
They did.
With all the like the military stuff and things like that.
And the ship.
Yeah, which it was the very cool. Was cool. And God, it was awesome effects for the time. We've talked about doing Flight of the Navigator for the show.
Yeah.
Because again, same reason. It's got that nostalgia value, but this one Vanessa's actually seen.
A lot. My grandparents had a VHS tape and that was one of 8 tapes they had. I've seen it a bunch of times.
But my kazoo.
I broke it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's
kazoo for you.
That's one we've all seen, isn't it? That's unusual nowadays. We don't do a lot of those.
We've only done a few of them ever.
Let's see. This one, however, was directed by Joe Dante, and this is the man who did Gremlins the year before.
Yep.
Do you like Gremlins?
He did The Howling. Later on, he did Interspace with Dennis Quaid. The one where he shrank down.
A fun movie, too.
Which I think they recycled some of the same special effects for that movie.
That could be. And he did The Burbs. Who was in The Burbs? Was it
Tom Hanks?
Was it Tom Hanks?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, watch it.
Gosh, what a great bad movie. Joe Dante wasn't a name I could have told you. I could have pulled out of a hat as a director in the 80s until, you know, we did this movie and I looked him up. And he's actually done quite a few movies, I've seen. But he hasn't done quite a few movies. He doesn't have this huge laundry list. He's got quite a few, and a lot of them are early. He did a segment of Twilight Zone movie. Remember the Twilight Zone movie?
Yeah.
Which had like 3 or 4 directors do different segments of it.
Right.
There was a Twilight Zone movie?
Oh, yes. Jason?
Ooh.
Thank you. let's see. Written by Eric Luke. Eric Luke's writing credits include this one, Not Quite Human 2, and Still Not Quite Human. I didn't look up what others were. I just felt like it was worth noting because that's all he had.
Right. Not Quite Human was a Disney Channel original movie about a guy that made a boy-like android.
A Pinocchio story?
Pretty much.
What was that show called? The Robot Girl.
Small Wonders.
Yes.
I remember.
Because both of those were on my favorites list back then.
Yeah, there was a thing in the 80s about robot children.
I loved that one so much.
And Daryl is one of my favorite movies of all time.
My mom told me I needed to make more friends.
AI was one of
the technology.
Made more friends. Yeah, I hear you. he did write like Tales of the Crypt stuff. He wrote on Gargoyles. He did a lot of TV stuff that he wrote. So this was one of the 3 movies. And it sounds like the other two were Disney Channel movies.
Yeah.
So
Gargoyles, the next generation retirement home.
Oh, good. Oh, God. Yeah. Good stuff. Jerry Goldsmith did the music, and he's done a ton of scores and probably has already come up on the show. I had to look. This was the same year as Legend when it came out, which have you ever seen Legend, Vanessa?
No.
Ooh.
Thank you. We definitely got to do that one if it passes the Richard test. Having to deal with baby Tom Cruise in it.
I'll watch it.
Rambo. He did Rambo. He did Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend. Those are all the same year. In fact, Rambo was, like I said, did the theaters the same day. And the Baby was the one with the little dinosaur. Do you guys
remember that?
I saw that in the theater, weirdly. My mom took me to the theater, that one. I hardly know anybody who's ever seen it, even.
I've never even heard of that one.
Yeah, I had a little brontosaurus, which we've learned since is a dinosaur that never even existed. This was his 3rd movie score for Dante, actually, after Gremlins, which was the year before. And Twilight Zone, the movie, he did the music for as well. Sounds pretty cool. Starring Mr. Ethan Hawke in his feature film debut.
He was so young.
So yeah, very young.
Played Ben Crandall. Heck, I was looking to see what else he'd done like immediately after this. I mean, Dead Poets Society was like 4 years after this, and I can't wrap my head around
Dead
that.
Dead Poets Society?
One of the kids. Yeah, he was in it.
He was one of the major kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Main character.
You'd have to, well, I mean, you just watched him in this as a kid, so you'd have to look at a picture of him from that era to see. Look up Ethan Hawke, Dead Poets. You'll find it.
Yeah.
You'll immediately recognize him. He's a very unique looking dude.
Oh, I'm sure. It's just been a few years since I've seen Dead Poets, and now I can't place him.
And he was, you know who he is, though, right? Other than this. Like, he was in Gattaca. He was in...
I've never seen Gattaca.
Sorry. We know that one. He was in Daybreakers. I think you've seen Daybreakers.
I have seen Daybreakers. We talked about that movie before. Yes.
He was in that. I like Ethan Hawke. He's cool. Yeah. He's interesting.
He's a top.
And he was. I thought he was a good child actor. You know, I thought it was a strong start.
Oh, that's which one he is. Okay.
he was the reason I watched Gattaca.
Similarly, River Phoenix in his feature film debut.
I was just going to say, too, you know who else was in this movie?
And also,
I do. I have a list. Yeah.
IMDb puts that together for us. It's really nice of
them. You know, and that's one place that I will say what a difference a year makes.
Stand By Me was the next year.
Yeah. He went from being the soft, chubby nerd kid to being the tough, outskirts bad boy.
There's no way. There's no way. Obviously, the filming, the period in which it was filmed, was at least a couple, 3 years apart. Because, I mean, that was too huge a change, don't you think?
I'm just, whoa.
Because they're not always filmed and then immediately come out,
I guess,
obviously.
With all the special effects and stuff, it might have been...
Yeah, because Stand By Me might have had a quick turnaround to theater from production because there wasn't a lot involved there.
That's true. Not lasers in that movie.
It was not an effects-heavy movie.
Boy, the effects in this were pretty cutting edge for the time.
They still kind of
held up.
You think so?
I really do.
Green screen. The green screen was bad.
I guess if
but
you're going to watch
as
for
much
that,
green screen.
There wasn't much of it, but when there was, you could tell it was happening.
It was in 1985. I'm just saying.
Independence Day had bad green screen. And
that was in 1994. I'm saying.
I just Explorers had an excuse.
It had an excuse. I'm not saying it was bad because it was
budget,
bad.
Two timing.
I'm not counting it against it. I'll put it that way.
I just like the fact that Star Wars didn't have green screen problems because they used blue screens.
That's true. That's true. Sad. another thing that's sad is River Phoenix passed away in 93. Halloween in 1993, I remember. He was 23 years old at the time. A very, very unfortunate loss to the acting world as well, as I'm sure.
Really was.
People that knew him said he was really, really crazy, cool human being, too. So
that is,
you never know how much you can trust that, but you know, it did seem.
But
you
know, he had a lot of genuinity in him.
And he was very charming, you know, whenever you saw him do stuff. But, sadly, and of course, is Joaquin his brother?
Yes.
Younger brother, and he's gone on to a really fascinating movie career. Like, fascinating is a really good word.
That is a good word.
I know I've seen him in stuff. I recognize the
name. Oh, my God.
Joker.
Yeah, most recently.
Okay, I'm here
He's
now.
That guy. Yeah. I'll always remember from Gladiator,
though. He's also in
though.
Her and a bunch of other things.
Oh, yeah, and Gladiator.
You ever seen Gladiator?
I've Russell seen parts Crowe? Of it.
He was Commodus.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I did the thumbs thing there. She
yep, yep. I gotcha.
The third wheel in this was Jason Presson, played Darren Woods.
Did he do anything else?
He was the yogurt jerk in Gremlins 2. That's about it.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't recognize him anymore, and
I didn't realize anybody else besides me saw that movie.
Oh, I love Gremlins.
We all
too.
Saw it.
I've actually seen the first one.
That particular kazoo has an asterisk, by the way. It's hard to say that the movie is absolutely worth seeing.
Oh, Justin wants me to see it. We just haven't
Gremlins
found it on streaming.
Gremlins 2 is amazing. I like Gremlins 2 better than Gremlins 1.
Well, Gremlins 2 is a comedy. Gremlins 1 wasn't.
Gremlins was a horror movie. Gremlins 2 was a comedy. There's a very different vibe here.
Some of the things I loved in Gremlins
2 was
came
epic.
Directly because I saw it in the theater and it was geared around a theater presentation.
Including the middle of the film breaks. They changed it in the video release to like going to a snowy screen and shit.
Oh, see,
they did and did different things with the puppets. They like hand puppets, shadow puppets.
Yeah,
but later on, when you catch it, like the streaming or anything like that, it's going to be one or the other. It's not going to be. I mean, I've seen it like later on. I think on TV as the theatrical version.
Though it would be nice if they'd rework some streaming stuff to make it look like your stream broke.
But I actually saw it in the theater. I saw it. Did you? Is that what you're just saying?
Yeah, I
saw it in theater. So you get to that point in the middle of the movie where the film breaks, and I mean, it looks real for a second. You're like, what the hell?
Hutch Mall Theater, same theater I watched.
The Gremlins start doing the Shadow puppets and stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. Only ever happened to me once.
Okay.
I've had a tape break.
I've seen it a few times. Yeah.
I've had weather affect a projection, and that was interesting.
Oh.
There was an electricity storm, and the digital projector just decided to short out.
Well,
I got my money back.
Super 8 movie projector at home, so I've had broken film things. But well, now I'm just dating myself.
Yeah, your whole movie is there, and a little different
story. Not that. No way. We had bought Super 8 movies.
I even had
the moon landing on Super 8.
Oh, that's weird.
Well, I was born in 1969.
I didn't even kind of buy them. That's weird. That's
To the Moon. Yeah, I think you could still buy that. They actually have a copy of the Super 8 at the Cosmosphere in Hutch. The same as an one that we had.
On display?
Yeah, as an antique on
they
display.
They got it from your family?
Yes, thank you. No, they didn't get ours. They have somebody else's.
The movie Super 8 would be a good one, if that's not on the list. Yeah. It's a Spielberg movie.
Sure, if it is.
It's good stuff.
Let's find out.
James Cromwell was in it as a Mr. Mueller. I did not recognize him at first. He was Zefram Cochrane in Star Trek. As Wolfgang's dad.
He plays a lot of Germans. Holy moly.
Yeah, he does.
That's a
crazy cool role for him. I didn't even recognize him until later in the movie after I looked up his name, because I was working on the cast as I was watching the movie, you know? So, like, the first time I saw him, I had no clue. I did not recognize him.
I had no clue until you said
it. Okay. Now I'm connecting him with American Horror Story, and that's a weird connection for explorers.
Well,
did you notice where he finally found that bug bomb?
Yeah.
Ooh.
In the bathroom.
And I got to mention Dick Miller, because
he had no point to be in the movie. Every single part that he was in could have been cut.
But he was an homage to the kind of movie it was.
Fair.
He has 184 acting credits, and several of them are in the kinds of movies that this movie was making homage to.
Fair.
Which is exactly why he was here. He was in Gremlins.
Yeah, he was in Gremlins. There was a crossover with Gremlins.
Yes.
There's even a reference to a newspaper article where it showed something had happened in the same town where the Gremlins took place.
Yeah, Kingston Falls riots. Kingston still Falls unexplained. Riots,
that's it. Yep. Now, was he the inspector? Because there is something...
He was the pilot.
The pilot.
Yeah, but he was looking into it. He was the guy that was following the kids around.
But that was that thing. That's one of those things that I know because... I know this movie wasn't completed when it was released.
Right. Yeah. I have notes about that. We'll have to talk about that a little bit because it might.
And so part of his arc, I think, got killed.
Maybe it would have made more sense.
I kept expecting him to come back. Yeah,
I thought it was pretty interesting. That part where he says, "I haven't had dreams like that since I was a kid."
But it's Chekhov's.
But he didn't have the technology to build up on it.
Right. But it suggests that this is
Chekhov's unrealized inspector.
Right.
He was also in Twilight Zone, the movie with which Dante, he was in his segment, It's a Good Life, and he was in The Howling, which Dante, directed. So, I mean, he's obviously a favorite of his anyway. So
he looks like an old Bruce Campbell.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I can see that kind of.
Well, older than Bruce Campbell is now.
And Bruce was definitely young at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
He was.
It looks like he could play Bruce Campbell's father in a movie.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I have to mention Robert Picardo.
I love that man.
He was Starkiller in the movie and movie sequences.
What?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you know who Robert Picardo is?
Yes.
Yeah. You can picture him, right? Bald, nerdy
but
looking
not
dude.
Not Starkiller?
Starkiller. Yeah. And if you watch
that wig.
If you go back and watch it, you can see it's him, but it's hard. It's hard at first. And he played Wack.
That's what made me look it up.
And
I can see that.
He played Wack, and he played Wack and Neek's father. Although you had mentioned it, so I looked it up. Frank Welker did a bunch of the voice work.
Because he didn't do the voice work for that.
For the dad.
And also,
Frank Welker, he was like Megatron in the 80s. He was that guy, did all the weird sounds with his voice. And
right.
He still does.
And I was going to say, of all shows, this was one of the most uncomfortable shows for him to have done because the costumes were not fun for him.
Yeah, I was reading about that. He said,
one was like balancing a typewriter on his head.
Yeah, he said the alien makeup was most uncomfortable he's ever worn, like having a typewriter. That's right. I found the same note. And the father was like balancing a television, he said.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I
could see that.
Yeah, whilst the crew were enjoying lunch, he'd have to sit there and take the pain, which drew him to tears and actually caused open lesions on his head.
Yeah. Anyways, I love him, and I'm glad he was in it, but I wished he hadn't had to suffer so much.
Yeah.
Whack was great.
This is not a movie I'd bring up to him if I had to talk to him in person.
He wears a fur coat in the first scene that he's in and takes it off in the following scene. That's because the production schedule was so rushed that the suit for Whack wasn't complete yet when they were filming the first scene.
So they had to cover it up. That's okay. Funny. That's cheap.
Yep. He did get the actor credit for the father, but you know, he didn't do the voice. And Welker also provided some voiceover for Whack as well for parts, and the rest of the dialogue was Picardo's. So
Whack was such a weird character.
Yeah. I guess Welker did some of the celebrity impersonations too, so he's good at that stuff. Oh, Picardo, let's see, he was also the same year, he did something else the same year. Oh, he was Meg in Legend, the hag.
What didn't he do?
Do anybody remember that Legend of the Hag that comes out?
Okay, I guess I'll have to rewatch Legend then. Fine.
She's
for the show. Wait for the show.
Yeah, I will. And he was a cowboy in Innerspace, which I thought was a really funny thing to realize now that I picture that as soon as he said that, because that's one that he changes into when he makes his face look different.
Right.
Uh-huh. Anyway.
I've never seen Innerspace, and that's a weird description for
best random credit I picked up because I was looking at stuff that Geek Fair. He was the Johnny Cab in Total Recall.
Yep.
What?
Robert Picardo was Johnny Cab.
Oh, God.
Love it.
I adore that man so much.
Like Johnny Cab.
$25 million budget. Opening weekend, it made 3.6, 9.8 gross. It was a box office bomb.
So. But it had stiff competition.
It did.
It did. And it developed into a cult classic later, so I bet you they made some of their money back on tape sales.
And I can't decide whether or not that's even the right description, because I know there's a nostalgia fest kind of quality here, but I don't know if it was so much a cult movie as it was just, it was one that on cable became really, and on video,
right,
became really well known. And a lot of, it was targeted a young demographic. A 12-year-old me loved this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. No doubt about it. And I think that plays heavily into how I still am trying to view the movie. Because one of the things I immediately noticed, and I made a comment about, is how little story there actually is in this. I mean,
right.
We're an hour into the movie and they're really,
nothing's happened.
And you can really tell when you're trying to capture clips because they're not interesting. You know,
But
it's a very 80s movie.
Yeah.
It held 12-year-old me's attention wrapped.
And that has to do with the what do they call that? Where you impress yourself up on the put yourself in the place of the character.
Yeah.
That transference aspect.
Yeah.
It has to do with, you know, imagining that this is happening. You're excited because it's happening to somebody that reminds you of you. You know, you can picture you're putting yourself in that moment or whatever.
Right.
That's true.
And those computer scenes took up a lot of time. And they drew us all into this computery world, which same thing Tron did, where it fancy lights, pretty colors,
good stuff,
moving camera stuff in a non-real world.
I didn't necessarily even take that it had a slow feel to it, personally.
No, it didn't have a slow feel.
I don't think the pacing was bad. I'm just saying that
it was a slow plot.
You talked about that IMDb summation being right on.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there really wasn't anything to it.
Fair.
You know, you could describe this story in two simple sentences and not miss anything.
The only way misdescribe it is to lie about it.
Now, I will say, because Richard already mentioned it, the film's production was thrown into turmoil. There were three top executives at Paramount that left to join other studios. Interestingly enough, when I was reading this bit of trivia, it is stuff that I kind of knew from documentaries and stuff I've been watching recently about movie making in that era.
The Ghostbusters.
Yep, that was one of them.
Yeah.
Michael Eisner and Jeffrey Katzenberg left for Disney, Barry Diller for 20th Century Fox. There was just a lot of this going on at the time. As a result, Joe Dante, he'd already been working on a time crunch by joining the project in late 84 with a projected August 85 release date, was told by Paramount that the release had been pushed up to early July and that the cast and crew were just to stop working. Whatever they'd managed to finish was what they would put in theaters as the final cut.
Wow, so, that sucks.
Yeah, and I mean, that wasn't a huge push-up, but enough that it obviously made a difference. That's why the helicopter pilot and Laurie Swan's plot lines are spotty and don't quite fit.
Yeah.
And the guy on a date at the drive-in is supposed to be Ben's older brother that we didn't
really
know about.
He mentioned him once.
Yeah, he says he entered his jerk phase when they're walking to the top of the hill. Yeah, that's the only kind of comment about him. And I guess in that one sequence with like the brainwaves going into Darren's head and he's having like that flash, that sudden group of images, mm-hmm. he's in there too. He's like supposed to be like a little older version of him or something, just like a bunch of images. Not surprisingly, movie was a little criticized for its patchy story and underwhelming climax, quote unquote. Joe Dante did say the original rough cut of the movie that he and his editors put together was around 3 hours and 15 minutes long.
That would have been a lot.
Which that, means that would have been a slow movie.
They cut almost half. They cut more half of what of they shot
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Originally, the film was going to be directed by Wolfgang Peterson. And this is the guy that did The NeverEnding Story.
Ooh.
Did Outbreak, Perfect Storm.
So they wanted a lot more out of this movie.
Yeah, they had different ideas. But he wanted to film it in Germany. He was trying to avoid the California doubling problem, which was a big thing, especially in the 80s, with so many movies being shot in the same areas again and again, that you know the whole world was starting to look like California.
you mean like the entirety of outer space looks like British Columbia?
Pretty much. Yeah, yeah. And so do most superhero movies.
A whole lot of those shows are now shot in BC, and so they all have the same different scapes.
Studio balked at that decision, however, so Peterson went on to instead direct his science fiction film to a little thing called Enemy Mine for 20th Century Fox.
That would be a good one for like the show. I like that movie.
Or maybe it wasn't Fox. Anyway,
I think it's on the list.
I think I put it on the list.
You guys got anything specific you want to discuss about the show?
Just one silly little note.
Yeah.
Meshach Taylor.
Was he the co-pilot?
He was the co-pilot, and he was Anthony on Designing Women. And
oh, my gosh. That's where I knew him from. I could not figure it out.
And he was, now I can't think of his name, the amazing window designer in Mannequin.
Mannequin, yeah. I almost had his name. I just lost it.
Yeah, I did too. I had it, and then as soon as I went
because
to say
it's he's such a flamboyant character, and the name was so fitting.
I haven't seen either of those movies.
Man,
Designing Women was a TV show for 20 years.
TV show, and it's not surprising. Mannequin was definitely a very deep 80s cut. So
deep 80s cut.
Big cable darling, though. I saw Mannequin so many times on TV.
I know, right?
I've seen a lot of references to Mannequin. I have not actually seen Mannequin.
And not a great movie. Who starred in it though? It was it's one of the Brat Pack kids.
Yeah,
yeah.
One, but I can't remember his name.
Anthony.
I think you're onto it.
Same one in Class. He was in Class with Rob Lowe.
Yes, that guy. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway.
But yeah.
You know, if we were really good at this job, we'd just look shit up while we're talking and then we'd have these answers, but we're not.
Yeah.
We don't care.
It's not important. He wasn't in this movie.
That's
Meshach
true.
Taylor was.
That's true. I always remember Mannequin because of the song, the Jefferson.
It's
Starship.
In my head
Starship.
Right now. Yeah. I'm trying not to sing it.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep, that one.
I loved Meshach Taylor, so I was like, ooh.
I did not know the actor's name. I don't think I've ever known the actor's name. That's interesting. That's he was really, because I saw a lot of Designing Women when I was young. My mom watched it all the time, so
yeah,
it was good. I liked Annie Potts was in it too.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful cast. You should check it out sometime, Vanessa.
Okay,
probably on Hulu.
It's a cute show. A bunch of like nods to what's the term? You know, references to homages to the toy monkey, Close Encounters,
right?
Which you know, the rat was named Heinlein.
Yeah, I love that.
Doing the sound effects in the drive-in movie were from Yar's Revenge.
Yeah. That checks out.
Okay, yeah.
was that Atari?
It was an Atari 2600 game. It was one of my favorites.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Yeah, that's surprising.
That's one I've actually played more of.
Rosebud was in the movie. The sled at the top of the junk pile. It's from Citizen Kane, where they built the Thunder Road.
Did you just spoil Citizen Kane for me?
I did.
Damn it.
Come on. Gotta warn us about spoilers.
Charles, Citizen Kane is 125 years old. Charles M. Jones Junior High School is named after Chuck Jones.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Never seen.
Chuck Jones is the...
he does the voices a lot.
Okay. Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh, gotcha.
And there's other Looney Tunes references in the movie. There's the hole that the spirit at the beginning makes being shaped like a Bugs Bunny head even.
Yeah.
Just
I did catch a couple
stuff.
Looney Tunes references.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and of course, What's Up, Dog?
Yeah.
There were a few other movies like, The Crawling Eye, The Day the Earth Stood Still. I had to look up this list. Earth versus the Flying Saucers, This Island Earth, and the 1953 version of The War of the Worlds are also featured in this movie somewhere.
Yeah, right. There's a lot
of
those movies.
The War of the Worlds
I've seen and want to watch
kind of disappointed in because I was watching this and I was like, oh, now I kind of want to go watch that.
Yeah. Yeah,
me too.
Now I kind of want to shut off this movie we're doing for the show and go watch something else that's 100 years old.
Right?
And I want to watch The Day the Earth Stood Still again. Because I had to finish this
for the show.
Only 80?
Both versions.
Actually, yeah, you're right. It's 80 years old. I actually kind of feel bad because the exaggerations when I say that are supposed to be like way over, and it's not that far over.
It's not that far over. Oh.
So, but yeah.
One of the things I really loved about this movie is the way they take advantage of the fact that most people in the mid-80s did not really understand a lot about how computers and electronics work. So they're able to sell things like you build a circuit board that then programs itself.
Yeah, good stuff.
Right?
Oh, okay.
That's viable.
Let's go deep geek for a second, shall we? The actual computer that was used to make the screen display for Wolfgang's computer was not an Apple IIc, which is
not even
seen.
Close.
Yeah. No. SGI Iris 1400 workstation that cost $35,000.
Holy moly.
It contained a 73 megabyte hard drive, 1.5 megabytes of memory, weighed 130 pounds, and required a custom portable wooden crate to house it on set.
Yeah. The scenes were even made were only made possible because that computer came into existence at that time.
It's
the only thing that could handle those graphics.
The way this is phrased, I kind of wonder about that too. It says the movie needed a program written in C language that could redraw a 3D wireframe scene in real time, feat that was not possible before SGI produced this specialized hardware. I was wondering if that meant that maybe they produced it for the needs of this movie. It's possible.
I think it was a coincidence because that type of tech is way above what a movie studio could put into it.
The movement of the energy sphere on screen was controlled by a mouse and happened in real time for each scene intake in response to the director's instructions, what to do.
Now, that makes that more impressive from my point of view.
Right? I was just thinking the same thing.
Refresh rate of the monitor was modified to synchronize with the motion picture camera to eliminate flicker by tapping into one of the circuit boards.
I wondered how it was that clean.
Clean, yeah. I was going to say the same thing. I was like, because nowadays we can do that. We don't have to worry about that with HD filming. But at the time...
4K, you're behind the times, Eric.
Yeah, right. Well, it's a type of thing. Leave me alone.
By the time this episode comes out of the podcast, it'll probably be on to 8K. So.
I think 8K is a thing.
We're current now, by the way. You make those jokes, but this podcast comes out.
Yeah,
this week.
I mean, in 3 days. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
The workstation used a Unix-based operating system. So I just wanted to share all that with you.
None of which Apple related.
Right.
Yeah. Which, on the other hand, later on, Apple switched to a Unix-based operating system when they went out to OS X. 10, whatever.
Thank you for that bit of, I have no idea what you're talking about, trivia. Much like all the rest of the stuff.
Well, they built a kernel on a BSD Unix core.
I see you adjusting your glasses.
Well, actually.
Actually.
I was a big Apple fan back then.
Right.
The name Starkiller was Luke Skywalker's original name for the Star Wars project.
I knew that.
I knew that too.
So that was an homage as well. One thing I looked up because I noticed when I was doing the caps that when he was doing when they were watching the drive-in movie, there was a delay in the sound, right? And I thought, oh, maybe that's because it's just a drive-in, right? So we're getting that kind of effect. It would be off. The dub was off.
As it would be.
But I was reading a little bit, and it looks like what they were doing with the Starkiller movie was a mimicry of this Italian Star Wars ripoffs that were going on at the time.
Yeah.
That were dubbed. They'd always be dubbed.
Badly.
And so that's
from the original.
So
Italian.
Picardo dubbed for his own performance. So they were off. I just thought it was great. This is really good. Let's see. We already talked about Picardo too.
I also thought it was funny and worth noting that I had seen this movie a few times, and this is the first viewing in which I noticed that the characters in the movie are reacting to things that are happening in the drive-through.
Drive-in.
Yeah.
It's called a drive-in, Jason.
It's a drive-in. I'd never caught that before.
You drive through, you don't catch much of the movie.
Yeah.
They did technically drive through it.
Oh, they did. Well, it was fly through.
But they literally flew through it.
Yeah.
Good call.
But you always have to stop at the snack bar. Well, they didn't stop.
I was going to say, the key to that is actually stopping.
So here's a funny thing, and this is just a cerebral thing, right? We're watching this. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, 12-year-old me is just excited over how this is happening, right? Oh, the kids are building a spaceship. They got this
thing,
that the globe that appears around them, and they can make it go where they want to, and it goes through anything, and nothing can stop it. much older me is looking at this and going, what are the military applications of this shit?
Oh, you're no not even kidding. Joking, man.
Right.
I mean, this is scary beyond belief, this idea of technology at this point.
Well, it's an airtight bubble, and they somehow pump oxygen into it. What actually happens to the carbon dioxide? The pressure in that thing would be astronomically high.
It would let a certain amount of pressure out, but not let stuff in or something at a certain key level.
I bet you they just didn't even think of it.
I assumed that the little oxygen-producing device was recycling, but that was just me.
Crossover, though, how many rules of that bubble match up with rules used for oxygen in the crystal sphere? There are some variations, but I thought it was interesting that there were some interesting close-ups for Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition crystal sphere space travel.
Well, yeah, that's all messy because...
that's all messy to begin with, but I loved the fact that it was well thought out.
Yeah, I like explaining the geekdom of it, but you might be going a little heavy here.
I am super heavy into the geekdom.
I was going to say, since you've broached that anyways, and he was just talking about the military applications, I remember that because I was thinking, just having access to the Wall of Force spell would be militarily overwhelming, and this is tons beyond that. It's mobile.
And it is unstoppable. From what we saw, anyway, it could go through anything.
Literally an unstoppable force.
And it literally was penetrating things at real speed, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it went through the hill. It was going through the hill, whatever velocity it was going. It wasn't slowed down by the process.
Zero cried with those books got destroyed.
And they weren't feeling anything on the inside. That's the other thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, no inertia.
Great.
Except for the, I can't breathe.
I was trying to remember, when he was lifted up, I was trying to remember this afterward. When he was lifted up from the globe, was he, like, twirling around inside or anything?
Yeah. Yes, apparently there was no gravity inside the globe either at that point, although that wouldn't be a problem later on.
Yeah, the ship, for some reason, stays upright.
Oh, I didn't pick it up as no gravity. I picked it up more as, like, when you're in one of those spinning barrel things and you're, trying to stand and you fall, lose your feeting and you're at a weird angle. I just thought he was at a weird angle in the bubble.
Sitting on the bottom of the bubble.
Wasn't touching the bubble, right?
I don't know.
He wasn't touching any of the services, and he was upside down.
Right. He was pre-floating inside.
I wonder how they filmed that. It's interesting.
Anyway, I don't know.
Maybe they borrowed Glenda's bubble.
Could be. She didn't need it after, like, 1940. What are you talking about? I had some notes on River Phoenix that I thought were kind of cute. He grew up in communities in South America, so he was somewhat unfamiliar with pop culture and slang words at the time. So during rehearsals, it became a running joke when he would attempt scripted well-known words and phrases and usually pronounce them entirely incorrectly. I think it's funny. He's also would usually remove his glasses in between takes because he felt embarrassed in front of the girls.
Those were very 80s glasses. I can see that.
That's fair.
A lot of them were in the 80s.
One of the movies referenced, The Island Earth, had a character that built a device with the help from an alien so they could meet.
Yep.
Only other note I had is that there is a Wilhelm scream, but I couldn't catch it. I tried, but I couldn't find it. It was during the Starkiller explosions.
Yeah.
So.
That was the perfect time to do it. It's in the spoof thing is where you throw that Wilhelm scream in.
You guys want to do some clips? Or do you guys got anything else you want to talk about?
Let's do
I did have one other thing I wanted to talk about real quick. At the end, talk about changing things. The boys are all flying through this dream world. The girl is with them. She's in her nightgown because that's the only thing they saw her in because of the creepiness.
Yep.
But I'm like,
she was at school too.
Was she in a nightgown or was she in a dress?
At school, but during the dream sequence she was still like in the nightgown.
And the dream sequence happened, I mean, it went straight from him looking at the amulet while he's sitting at his desk to the dream sequence.
Yeah.
So do you think it happened right then because it was glowing right then, so they were thrown into the dream right there from school? Or was that supposed to be later that night?
I don't know. But I'm assuming the fact that she was in her nightgown was because it was an extension of him creeping on her in her window.
Which
was totally creepy.
Boy, was that pervy.
Anyways, that's why I wanted to mention that.
It was creepy. Very, very Peeping Tom.
It was like, that's a weird subplot, but let's go with it. It was the 80s.
I caught a few clips. This one was like towards the beginning of the movie, when they first got the first talking after first dream, which I guess did it start with the dream. I think it opened with the dream, didn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's that diagram for my dream. Hope it makes more sense than last time.
Come on.
Well, this is more like it. I think maybe I could wire this up to my Apple.
Looks like some sort of antenna.
There were three of these, all the same. But I didn't get all of them. I think there was more.
Well, it's an interesting output stage. I didn't know you knew anything about electronics.
Maybe I do.
Maybe I do. Yeah, just nothing, apropos nothing, but kind of a little setup. I do like the fact he said more than last time.
Yeah, he's been having these dreams for a while.
And obviously it didn't work the previous times, so.
Or the drawing was insufficient to even think putting together. Yeah,
maybe
stuff.
The drawing was just more detailed, because he did like wake up and immediately go to the desk and start drawing stuff.
Which is supposed to show that it's been happening for a while. It's not something that just happened now and, hey, let's put together this thing we had a dream of last night.
Yeah.
Because I remember everything from my dream.
We are RPG nerds, so.
Watch out for that jerk face, Steve Jackson. Oh, Steve Jackson's Steve got Jackson, elephantitis of the ego.
I just had to cap that.
Benjamin!
Wolfgang's out.
And this is?
Darren.
You only have to tell me once. I'll never forget anything.
I like
that. Wolfgang is down in his lab.
She will never call him by his proper name throughout the entire movie.
Except for the once.
Wolfgang!
Again.
Yes, Mother? Benjamin is here with his friend, Derek.
Derek got it wrong. I loved that.
Not 2 minutes later.
And they had an intercom, you know. She said he's down in his lab. That whole, you know.
Yeah.
Dexter's lab vibe. That whole,
with a computer that has a whole 128K.
This is normalized in their home, in their house in the 80s. I wanted a lab.
I mean, right? His dad in the opening sequence where you see the dad is walking around with an oxygen mask on. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Dad had a lab. Kid had a lab.
Which obviously
the
entire basement.
But his brother's trying to eat baby food through a Halloween mask. And it's just like,
yeah.
Okay, so not everybody got it.
That happens.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes genius comes out of the weirdness of youth.
Baklava isn't German, right?
No, it's Greek.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Mediterranean. Okay.
Geek pastry.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, geek pastry. They said that.
It's
geek
pastry.
nuts. No inertia?
I couldn't feel myself speed up or slow down.
Do you know what this means? Do you realize what it means?
No.
Trägheit, Schlossigkeit. That's German for no inertia.
No.
Inertia.
We had something to sit in.
And so the idea is born.
Wow, hey, I forgot how to word.
I love the dynamic here, too, because you got the dreamer, you know, Ben, who is all in. This is his inspiration. It's his being. The computer nerd, the guy who, you know, can the super smart guy who can develop the super difficult, complicated part of this. And then you got the engineer, the kid who builds shit. Right. I think it's a really cool kind of dynamic, and it plays through in their roles very strongly all the way to the end.
Yeah.
All the dialogue choices are well represented. Their roles never shift from that too much, and their personalities support it. It's really
cool.
Yeah,
it was,
which is still really what made it a better movie. Yeah,
and it, again, that's good writing. But when I was a kid, it didn't matter.
But it did. You just didn't realize how much it mattered,
because who do you identify with? Right,
the one that's like you.
And I know that in retrospect, I know that I would have been more Ben than Wolfgang.
And they actually kind of combined two tropes into Darren, because Darren was also the tough guy.
Yeah, he was the one who helped against the bully at the beginning.
He helped against the bully and saved his life.
He was also the one with kind of the tougher home life.
Yeah.
You know, they give you that.
His home life was not as well, which led to the great line later, it's their dad.
Yeah. And the throwaway line that I never would have caught before, where he says, my dad did teach me to run, and now he can't catch me. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I never would have seen that from that angle as a kid. But I'm sure there are kids that did.
But when he was watching, he was watching the interaction and how afraid the boy and the girl were of the father figure.
Yep.
It's like, guys, it's their dad. And the other two could not believe it, because they had happy dads.
Yeah, at least nothing that they could relate to in that relationship.
But it kind of goes to the Ninja Turtle thing, what you were talking about.
How's that?
You've got the smart one. You've got the dreamer. You've got the leader. You've got the tough guy. Everybody has a Ninja Turtle they identify with.
I've never really explored Ninja Turtle psychology. That's great.
Oh, no. It's a huge thing. Everybody had a Ninja Turtle that they identified with.
I was April.
I was a Donatello. I liked the computers and the gizmos and the science of it.
No, I was very much a Leonardo, though. I was definitely more Leo than
you're an alpha. Mikey. Yeah. I totally get that. My brother was a Raphael. He was
the tough,
the cocky, tough, snarky. And so it's everybody has a Ninja Turtle. Everybody has an Explorer. When you're watching this at the 12-year-old, you identify with one of them, but you're going to identify with one of them.
Oh no. I just loved that.
Oh, no.
And it, back to the total roll thing, right? Let's see. CO2.
So, who would like to tell us something about carbon dioxide? Ben.
Carbon dioxide. That's what you'd breathe on Mars. And they have dust storms for months there, And... and the temperature's 50 below, and that's what you'd breathe on Mars.
What a geek. This is the point in which I'm like, 45 minutes into the movie and go, I'm still capturing clips of kids in school. This isn't what I remember this movie being about.
Right.
I liked the way that demonstrated, a little bit to him, though. Let's see.
And emphasized how little sleep he was getting.
All right, some of the fun stuff. The drive-in?
I can't believe this. We must be going over 100 miles an hour and haven't even used 1/10 of our power yet.
Wow. Where should we go? Where's all the action on Friday night?
The drive-in.
Naturally. Strings.
Oh, Starkiller. This is great.
Have you seen this?
Yeah, the blonde guy's Starkiller, and he spends the whole movie blowing up aliens.
Explosions in space? It's impossible.
Oh, what do you mean? You can hardly see the strings.
He was like my father. Do you see what I mean?
He was my father.
And she had three navels. I love that, where they fly the ship in front of the screen and then have to kind of move away. But that's when the computer took over, the code took over. They fly through the drive-in.
Because they lost control.
All that stuff, but... that's one of those iconic shots for some reason for Explorers for me is the in front of the drive-in screen with the Thunder Road kind of hovering in front of it right there.
Yeah, it was one of the better scenes. I liked it.
The dream?
We have to run hundreds upon hundreds of serious tests. It could take years. What are you talking about? That was the most important thing that ever happened. Couldn't you feel it? That feeling way inside? We were flying.
Come on, Ben, make some sense.
We almost didn't come back, but we did come back. Here we are. What do you think? We should trust the dream, right?
Sorry, man. I want to live.
I love the score in there, the gold star.
That was nice, yeah. Don't trust the dream.
The
aliens.
The we're learning something music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It had that kind of dramatic, that he was talking about how he feels, what he believes, it's supposed to be important. This is the way he said it. Yeah,
the drama build.
It's really beautiful.
Gravitas.
And, it's an important moment in the movie when they're having that conversation because it kind of sets up for the next act. But it's a pretty quick turnaround from that to because of the next thing where they share a dream, which I don't think I've got that specifically because it wasn't that interesting. The audio
feel very wasn't interesting.
Yeah, good word. It's definitely a point where, you had to move from there. And it moves pretty quickly from we can't do this, we're not doing this, to, oh, look, we're doing it. It's kind of, again, all the drama of your dream is dead to, no, it's not.
Well, they went from relying on an oxygen source to not relying on an oxygen source, which was honestly a very big turnaround.
That's fair. Is that how it went?
Yeah. They had the oxygen tank during the first flight, and they all had the oxygen masks.
Right.
And then they all had the shared dream where they hit that missing element of the circuitry that they were needing to create that oxygen.
Which showed 2 points.
I missed that.
One,
okay.
They got the oxygen piece they needed. Two, they were all three in it, and they were all three supposed to be there.
Exactly.
It made it more real.
Yeah, they had to wire in this additional circuit board, and they had that little oxygen explosion in the weird shack they were in.
tool shed.
Which is not OSHA approved, by the way.
I can't imagine it would be. Yeah, Dad's tool shed.
I called this one the calling.
We have to. Let's face it. Somebody's calling us.
They've been calling us since the beginning.
But from where?
I don't know. But it's somewhere up there.
Well, I guess we have to find out, right?
Well, they got us this far. It's like we're supposed to go.
Well, let's go. Before my dad sees us work shit.
That was the line.
Work shed, yeah.
Right. That was a funny thing when they started that scene. I was like, where the hell are they?
Yeah.
You know, we already blew up the basement. I guess we needed another place to blow up.
Darren's right. Dad's
a more dangerous place.
They blew up the hill, too.
That was the other thing. It's like, as soon as you saw the shed, you knew it was going to get destroyed.
It kind of looked like it was already half destroyed.
Yeah, that's true. Before my dad sees it.
Yes.
What? He didn't notice the difference?
But you don't want Dad to see that you've destroyed the shred.
The shred. That's
shred.
Right.
You don't shred the shed. Shed shred. That's okay. I thought you said calling instead of calling, and I'm like, I don't remember a calling scene.
Oh, cool.
That's a different movie.
That was this next scene.
Okay, you act now. Do you need to go? Here's a level.
Target.
Maybe they don't have eyes.
Think we'll enjoy living here?
I wonder what they're waiting for. I mean, they must have been preparing for this for thousands of years. Maybe they're not hungry yet.
I like that. That's totally the line I would use.
That's so good. But they were handling very well. It's at this point, the kids are just in adventurer mode for us, right? I mean, as the kids watching, we're just like, yeah, this is all. We're not super freaked out. We're a little freaked out.
They're exploring.
They're totally going to have a breathable atmosphere inside of an alien spaceship.
Well, you know, they weren't dead once the bubble went away, so they must.
Well, yeah, Robert Picardo breathes oxygen.
Well, and it was clear by the fact that the aliens sent oxygen-producing things that they were aware of the atmosphere.
That's a good point. I like it. I'll take it. I accept. They sent oxygen-producing technology because maybe they also rely
on it. But spaceships are like fish. They all swallow each other.
I noticed that as well.
Always a bigger fish. Yep.
But they did describe the spaceship for the two that we initially meet as the equivalent of stealing Dad's car. So
right.
Maybe the big one was the house.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
He had to drive the house to go pick up the car.
Hey, oh,
I hate
space.
It when I have to do that.
That's the way it goes.
Those kids.
I thought the bigger one was just Dad's work vehicle.
They live on a houseboat.
I also love the fact that they completely ignored all normal ship stylizations.
Yeah.
Because in space, it doesn't matter what shape the ship is. There's no air to be aerodynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
So they didn't make it all sleek and ship-like. It's just two boxes.
You don't have to reduce drag. You just have to enforce propulsion.
Well, son.
Yep.
I come in peace.
I've waited all my life to say this.
Be my guest.
We come in peace. Great, now try how do we get back to our ship. No, just give him a minute. He's probably just translating in his head. See, if he can communicate, he can give us the answers to anything. He's about to say something.
What's up, Dad?
What?
I wanted him, when he had his hand up, to do the Vulcan, but that in the 80s, that wasn't so prolific.
Whack.
What's your name, son?
Ben,
where are you from?
Earth.
Anybody here from Earth? Earth, see? You got all friends here today. Ben, I'd like you to do me a little favor, if you will. Would you do that?
Sure.
Ben, I'd like to improve my reception just a little bit, so would you raise my antenna for me? Not that one, Ben. Not that one. Thank you.
Please?
Yep, that's right. All right, move it a little to the right, and out a little further.
Oh, hello, Dad. Hello, Mr. Benny.
Feels good.
The whole time, Ben is sitting there going, why, what are we doing?
See, Vanessa, back in the day, sometimes when we had our receivers that picked up airwaves.
I know what rabbit ears are. Thank you.
We would even put useless flags of aluminum on them thinking it would do something.
Oh, that's right.
I know, and it really doesn't help.
I don't remember that stuff.
Does it hurt, though?
My dad got into cable when I was like 5 or 6. I don't remember that.
Once my mom got cable around the late 70s, we never stopped having cable after that.
My grandparents had an outdoor antenna, so if the wind blew wrong, you didn't have TV.
But the TV in my bedroom for a long time had rabbit ears before we got whole house cable.
And it's always funny to think about this because I cut the cord in like 2003. I haven't had cable in almost 20 years now. I mean, television. I pay them for my internet service. I pay them a lot for my internet service.
Out the nose.
Yeah, I pay for my internet service. But yeah, I quit watching cable TV a long time ago.
Yeah.
Mine was cut on Tuesday.
Aliens.
This isn't the way we really are. Don't you know that?
You expect me to believe that? Look at this. Your people just like to blow things up. Look, we sent out those signals because we wanted to meet. But it had to be someone special. You! So you could explain. You're not like the rest of them. You know we could be friends.
We only got the chance. Look, I know I must look weird to you, but how do you think you look to me? Listen, I watched 4 episodes of Lassie before I figured out why the little hairy kid never spoke.
Look.
I mean, he rolled over, sure, he did that fine, but I didn't think he deserved a series for that.
This isn't real. And we don't really kill people. Well, we do, but... But not aliens,
because
we haven't met any.
Not helping your case, kid.
Because we haven't met any.
Although to be fair, we do like kid. To blow things up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The hairy kid line was one of my favorites.
That's great.
Yes.
I remembered that one. That was one of the few lines I remembered from the movie, actually, for some reason. From, because I had seen this probably in at least 15, 20, before Vanessa ever saw it. The last time I saw the movie, I'm pretty sure.
Well, it's true. I mean, they saved a lot of money on Lassie not having to pay speaking lines to her.
That wasn't what I was thinking. Okay. Stole the car.
What a bummer. You stole your dad's car? Well, we could get away with it.
But we did.
But we did.
We practically did. Well, we got away with it. But you're such a wimp anyway.
Boy, he's really pissed.
That's why you have to go. He'd never understand. Especially about us, Wolfgang.
I just had to catch some of him.
Oh, yeah. And when I was watching it and I could see Locke's father,
yeah,
I didn't hear it. But with my ears open and my eyes closed, that was definitely Negatron.
Yeah. I love the sound effect, too, when across his neck, you know.
Right.
It's great. And, boy, those were earthy gestures, weren't they?
Right. Right. Yeah. There's a lot of great stuff in here. I wish they would have been able to flesh out the plot.
They had necks.
I had one more just to remind us a little bit of the one little, yeah.
Pretty cute, huh?
Hubba, hubba. Boy, I'd like to get my cups on her.
Someday she'll be my girlfriend.
Maybe sooner than you think.
What's this? It's a harmonica. You put it in your mouth.
Oh.
Yeah, and see, you blow... No. No, you can't play it very well like that.
Way to go, stupid.
It's okay.
Doesn't even offer me any.
The eating of the harmonica is so much worse audio only.
I know! The sound effect is so good! she bites off her like a candy bar. And he says, she didn't offer me any. Such siblings here at this point. It's so good in that last scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to play that too because it was the same scene. It was good. Let's see. I got something else. Boy, am I glad I don't have to come up with anything for this section. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Rich?
All right. Thumbs up. I'm still going to go with the computer graphics, the flying graphics scenes, some of the circuit board stuff. I know it was Mod Podge. It was, nothing actually transferable, but this is fiction, science fiction. So I enjoyed that. You know, it's what drew me in. Thumbs down. I'm at the end of the day, I'm going to just straight up definitely focusing in on the pilot's plot, but focusing in on the fact that there were tales missing, and making a decision to break it into two movies or something like that, I think would have been a better choice. But yeah, I think they could have done more with it. On the other hand, I don't know if it was a longer movie or it was drug on too much. But for the time, for that 80s movie, the sense of adventure, the sense of wonder, the path they go through, the characters, the performances, the music and sound, the lighting, it's all great. And I think even if you don't have the nostalgia element, it's something you should check out at least once in your life. And if you do, I think it's worth a rewatch.
Watch it with the kids.
Yeah, I'm giving it 4.5 stars because it doesn't pace awful and it doesn't break down.
When I started the movie, I was actually kind of wondering why it was PG. You get into a little bit and look at some of the dialogue and stuff they talk about. I mean, very much like preteen kids.
Well, you know. I couldn't remember much of the movie when I went into it because it's been over 2 decades since I've seen it. And so I'm sitting here watching it and I'm like, oh, that's right. Because all I could remember was the ship flying. I couldn't remember how or why or how the kids made the ship fly. So like, first I see the thing where they bring up the ball moving and I'm like, oh yeah. And then like later on something else happens. I'm like, oh yeah. And then I'm like, oh yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah. So it's like all this little reimagining, reawakening that stuff.
Trying to decide too about the pilot because you mentioned that. And I know Vanessa mentioned earlier, we talked about a little bit in the stuff about them, you know, not finishing the movie. But I look at it now, and when I was watching, I was thinking, that was a really incomplete thread.
Yeah, it felt to me like Chekhov's pilot was never realized.
Right, exactly. He sees the thing in the sky, and then he hunts down the kid, finds the backpack, and then he runs to in time to see them taken off and make some sort of wisecracking, you know.
Way to go, kid.
Way to go, yeah. Okay.
If there was a second movie, he might have the Wish Upon a Star from Empire, Close Encounters of the Third Kind experience when he finally got to meet the aliens.
The funny thing here is I think as a kid, this plot line didn't bother me. Because I think as a kid, you are identifying with the kids, and suddenly this adult, this grown-up, is there, and it's that scary moment. It's that little tense moment. It's just a reason to get away.
It cranks up tension.
And so it doesn't. I think that's the only role it plays in the story. And that's, I guess, okay.
He should have been the one to show up in the last flying scene, not the girl.
Yes, I agree. And I feel like she was put in there to tie her in a little more or something.
He hadn't had dreams like that since he was a kid, which meant he was having the dreams too. He was just over a different section of the circuit board. He should have showed up and it would have been like...
And even technology was just to, wasn't advanced even enough. It was just to help them get out of the water. They should have had Dick Miller show up at the end, help them out of the water as the thing was sinking, so he was standing there with the kids watching it go into the drink. I didn't really need any more of that, I think. Any more than that. It would have been a little nice little resolution.
Yeah, something to tie it up.
Meanwhile, instead, you had the girl
run out there, hang out in the favor of
being creepy.
Yeah. Still not as creepy.
Because, you know, when an alien gets into your dreams and makes you connect dreams with a boy that you barely talk to, all of a sudden, romance. Isn't that how it works, Vanessa? Yeah,
first thing you do is kiss the boy.
I'm getting there.
Sorry. Yeah, that's Vanessa's plan.
Vanessa's next.
Speaking of.
Okay, thumbs down. Human-human relationship. There's no connection to anything in the storyline and completely makes no sense. Second point, human-alien relationship. Who wrote that line? All of it was bad.
So tragically bad.
Third point was pilot. We've already covered that. That being said, I still enjoyed the movie. Thumbs up was literally everything else. Nice. I would still give it 4.5 stars. If they had cut out the weird freaking relationships, it would have been a 5-star movie.
I mean that.
Although for kids at that age, it probably every relationship's a weird relationship. So
An alien.
Are you being specious right now?
An alien with Betty Boop
vibes.
Then he's
known for 5 minutes.
The five minutes thing.
They're such cartoons anyway. So, you know.
What? Oh, so now it's a thing against cartoons.
Yes. Jason?
Thumbs down. I hate to hammer on the same nail, but... this could have been a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
This should have been a 90-minute movie.
Oh, no, the director says it should have been a 3-hour and 15-minute movie.
It should have been a 90-minute movie, or it should have been a 3-hour movie. But there was too much missing...
For what they got. Yeah.
The stuff that was missing, the tie-up, should have been cut. either cut it all or don't cut any of it.
Could have been. You know, again, the pilot, the role that I just talked about, he wasn't necessary, obviously. I mean, even if he used a little bit to crank up tension, not necessary.
Right.
Not there. And the girl, again, completely unnecessary. You could have, I mean, all it was, again, was I'm a 12-year-old watching this movie, and the thing with the girl is kind of cool because I'm a 12-year-old watching this movie.
I think.
No other
you know,
point.
As far as the girl thing goes, you know, all of the girl could have been cut, except maybe the pervy scene, because the kid's a perv and 12-year-olds are pervs. And
it's you're fair. Not wrong.
She wasn't a MacGuffin at all.
You know.
That's fair.
You know, let it be the, we looked in the window. Because at the beginning, you know, that one line, you know, it's like, if I could only see in her room once.
God damn. You know,
not even see her in her room, just see in her room. So they got that, then cut all the rest of it without her.
Sure.
You know, take the note away, take the flying kiss away, because, yeah, that's
and the she'll be my girlfriend maybe sooner than you think.
And I'd like to get my cups on her. What? Wow. Come on.
We already have one fair, human alien relationship at that point.
He's also a kid. Yeah.
There's also a kid. But,
and Neek wanted to get her cups on Wolfgang, so it's okay.
Right. And I'm actually going to defend Neek and Wolfgang. I'm going to come
five
to Neek.
Wow. Relationship.
No.
Infatuation.
They have machines that input thoughts into your head very rapidly. We did not see what Neek and Wolfgang were doing. It's possibly that he's now known her for a lifetime in that brief, in that 5 minutes or that they were looking for it.
More to the point, she has.
I was about to say, I don't know that humans would have the same input that aliens would. She might know more about him than he knows about her.
Yeah.
Which still makes
which
it
might add to her, in fact.
I was referring to what we learned from Darren.
Yeah.
You know, when he got zapped by the thing and he's like, it's like they put pictures in your mind.
Yeah, but we didn't see that happen to Wolfgang.
We didn't see it, but it can be inferred.
I love that
there
argument.
Was an inference that stuff happened before we got there.
And how intelligent she was and how no human on Earth could possibly ever live up to her. I love it. And the fact that he, of all people, became the Lothario when earlier he was like, can't you ever think of anything that matters?
Yep.
When he gets up into space, he's all of a sudden like, hey, girl. And the guy that was all, hey, girl, is now all like, hey, secrets of the universe. I love it. I dug that.
I didn't capture Darren say maybe there are a bunch of Amazons who want to breed line.
I don't remember that one.
Which then makes me want to watch Amazon Women on the Moon.
I knew it would.
Robert Picardo was in that movie.
And so I thoroughly enjoyed this film. I do think that they either needed to shore it up or expand it, one of the two. But it was a great movie when I was a kid. It was a great movie 2 days ago. 4.5 stars.
Nice. Kid? Wow. The pressure's on, man.
I have to follow all of that. Okay, then. Thumbs up. This movie has a flying tilt-a-whirl inside a force field that goes into space. Thumbs down. I don't have one. 4.5 stars. I love this. I've always loved it. I will always love it. It's a great movie.
Ironically, before this ever started, I was like, I think this is going to be a 5-star movie for me before we go in, right? And I watched the movie. And I'm still kind of on the fence because I've had a lot of time to think about how I want to handle movies that we talked about this with the Monster Squad, how I want to handle movies that I loved as a kid that don't feel the same today. But the flaws in the movie are a little glaring, but they're not important. It's a 4.5 star movie for me as well.
Wow.
4.5 across the board.
This is our first unanimous movie.
What's the average?
Get back to me on
I
that.
I add 4.5 and I add 4.5 and I divide that by 5. 4.5.
Yeah, I figured out.
4.5 stars. That's the second lowest rating group.
Have we ever had a unanimous movie before?
I don't know.
We have never had
a
unanimous movie before.
This really.
We haven't even gotten close to it. Well, we've gotten marginally
Conan
close.
Was pretty close on unanimously terrible.
Well, that's a whole other story. We couldn't agree on how terrible to mark it.
That's true.
You're going to play for school, Jimmy, really?
Well, that was a trip. What do we got next week, Vanessa?
Sneakers.
That'll be fun. That's a good one. It's a Richard pick.
Yay.
It's a Dick pick. Thanks. Make sure you watch it before next. I think it's on HBO Max. So
yes.
If you have it, access to it, go and watch it before the next show. Anyway, get on out of here for today. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Exposition Street. For Richard, for Jason, for Vanessa and the kid, my name is Eric. I've been a fantastic week. We'll see you then.